Is communism immoral? With militant materialism as its basis, it is not surprising that communism is dishonest in all its methods, rejecting all Christian ethics, and resulting in communists themselves quickly becoming utterly unprincipled in their personal and social relationships. But it is not simply that these are the results of the absence of good in its theories. Communist teachings on questions of ethics and principles are actively evil. Communists have a code of behavior which determines their actions and gives them clear guidance on all major and minor questions of ethics. It is the exact opposite of that of Christianity. In Ludwig Feuerbach, Engels says that when one accepts dialectical materialism, quote, the demand for final solutions and eternal truths ceases once and for all. On the other hand, one no longer permits oneself to be imposed upon by the antithesis between true and false, good and bad. One knows that these antitheses have only relative validity. End quote. Marxist theory tells the communist that the goal of socialism will be achieved only by revolution, that all progress proceeds from class struggle. For the communist, that struggle is a war, and in war, he argues, any course of action is permissible. One must use correct strategy and tactics if the war is to be won. In war, one employs guile and subterfuge. One seeks to penetrate the enemy's camp by stealth, outwit him, deceive him, and, if necessary, ultimately destroy him. Before deciding on any course of action, therefore, either personal or political, the communist has only to ask himself, does it serve the class struggle? If it does, then it is justified, and no other moral or ethical considerations matter at all. If it does not, it is wrong. Thus, for example, the British Communist Party may for a period woo the support of liberals, Labour Party members, or some other political grouping, or maybe it will seek the support of religious denominations or certain religious leaders, or again some particular section of the community such as the small traders, professional classes, or intelligentsia. It will flatter them, support some of their demands in return for a measure of agreement on some point on which the party is for the moment concentrating. But no informed communist will have any illusions about such an alliance. The art of winning allies and making use of them is expounded at length in the writings of Lenin and Stalin. When the end has been served, they will quickly throw their allies overboard, and in the event of the Communist Party coming to power, will not hesitate to liquidate them. Even whilst they use them, they despise them. Christian organizations are not infrequently used in this way. During the Spanish Civil War, for example, many Protestant clergy appeared on platforms with communist speakers during what were, in fact, communist campaigns. The party used the support and standing of the clergy, whilst having no illusions about what would happen to them and their religion should communism ever come to Britain. In Hungary in 1947, the communists, wishing to break the resistance to the spread of their doctrine on the part of the Catholic peasantry, raised teams of volunteers to go out into the countryside each weekend, repairing war-damaged Catholic churches. Communist leaders appeared in the churches when the job was done, and were often garlanded by grateful congregations. Having thus won the Catholic support and admiration, they were free to seize power, which they did, and within a few months the persecution of the church began. Such practices are normal to communism. Deceit is, in fact, made an art, and is studied with care by those who use it. Thus Lenin, instructing communist journalists on their methods of work, drew their attention to the deceit and lies of sections of the bourgeois press and even urged them not only to emulate them, but to do the job better, studying such methods and improving upon them. And those instructions by Lenin are printed and circulated for the use of the daily worker staff here in Britain for their guidance too. So in their personal relations, communists will stoop to anything, provided that it serves the class struggle, for everything is subordinate to that. And of personal behavior under Marxian socialism, Engels says in his Origin of the Family, quote, when these people are in the world, they will care precious little what anybody today thinks they ought to do. They will make their own practice and their corresponding public opinion about the practice of each individual, and that will be the end of it, end quote. But, we are sometimes told, there is a new communist morality which is higher than any bourgeois morality. If we examine it, we shall discover that communism is essentially immoral. Its aim is ultimately to destroy marriage and the family as we know them today. In practice, even now, its influence leads to the spread of immorality and the corruption of Christian youth. First, let us see what the Marxist theorists have said on the question, since their works are studied and applied with such devotion by the communists themselves. The family. In The Origin of the Family, Engels describes the family as, quote, that compound of sentimentality and domestic strife, end quote. And throughout their writings, Marx and Engels advance the view that bourgeois marriage is no more than, quote, legalized prostitution, end quote. Divorce. On page 75 of The Origin of the Family, Engels declares, quote, probably the only reason why the Catholic Church abolished divorce was because it had convinced itself that there is no more a cure for adultery than there is for death, end quote. Reviewing the consequences of women working in industry, he notes with approval that, quote, "The wife has, in fact, regained the right to dissolve marriage, and if two people cannot get on with one another, they prefer to separate," end quote. As to divorce under Marxian socialism, he says, quote, "If affection definitely comes to an end or is supplanted by a new passionate love, separation is a benefit for both partners as well as for society. Only people will then be spared having to wade through the useless mire of a divorce case," end quote. The home. Looking forward to the Marxist state, Engels describes the home as it would exist. He says, quote, "Private housekeeping is transformed into a social industry. The care of education of the children becomes a public affair. Society looks after all children alike, whether they are legitimate or not. This removes all the anxiety about the consequences, which today is the most essential social and moral as well as economic factor that prevents a girl from giving herself completely to the man she loves. Will not that suffice to bring about the gradual growth of unconstrained sexual intercourse, and with it a more tolerant public opinion in regard to a maiden's honor and a woman's shame?" End quote. Women in the home. The modern individual family, he says, is founded on the open or concealed domestic slavery of the wife. Morality. Morality, the Marxist theorists are agreed, must be subjected only to the same test as other aspects of human behavior. Says Lenin in his book on religion, quote, "For us, morality is subordinated to the interests of the proletarian class struggle," end quote. And again on the same page, quote, "We say that our morality is wholly subordinated to the interests of the class struggle," end quote. This is reflected in practical form in the policies of the Communist Party itself, and is the key to many of its campaigns. Thus, for example, the Communist Party everywhere leads the demand for more creches and nurseries for small children, and for women to go into industry. The woman comrade who gives up her work in the office or factory to spend time in her home and caring for her children is viewed with considerable disapproval in party circles. The raising of the family and the molding of children's lives upon which both the material and spiritual future of our race depends are seen as servitude and a task which should be left to the state. The consequence is that the children of Communist Party members often barely know their parents and are almost totally deprived of the influence and atmosphere of the home. But the hundreds of thousands of married women who went into the factories during the war learned the appalling difficulties which face a woman with a family under such circumstances. They found, in practice, that they did not lose the servitude of the kitchen, but merely added to it the servitude of the factory as well, for the work at home had still to be done. And today, many young mothers and their infants are learning for the first time the pride and joy of parenthood and the home. Yet the communists must continue to campaign for the continuation of that wartime expediency, since this is a fundamental of their faith. Marx's teaching on marriage and the home was put into practical operation in Russia immediately after the revolution and the establishment of the socialist state. Women were induced by propaganda and necessity to go into the factories and to put their children into nurseries. Abortion and divorce were made as easy as possible. On these two last points, policy has more recently been modified, but not because of any fundamental change in doctrine. That remains as before. The changes were made in the expectation of war and the need for unlimited cannon fodder. For this reason, large numbers of children, who are accommodated in the creches and nurseries, were and still are encouraged. But this is but further proof of the utter cynicism of the communists, for they have every intention of returning to the fundamental teachings on the question once the size of the population has been sufficiently increased. It is a degrading manifestation of the communist practice of making millions of people order their lives like so many machines responding to the leaders at the top. Communist teachings on morality are reflected too in the personal lives of Communist Party members. The sneers at bourgeois marriage, the sanctity of the marriage vows in the home, and the evil theories they are taught inevitably have their effect on the members' personal behavior and leave their mark on those who pass through the party's ranks. Thousands of young men and women and sincere workers are annually corrupted as a consequence. From the network of organizations which surround the Communist Party and are created by it goes out an ever-widening influence against all accepted Christian ideas on the home, family, children, and morality, which results in a growth of cynicism and immorality in circles far removed from communism and which are by no means Marxist. It undermines, in fact, all those conventions which have their origins in Christian teaching and practice over a period of centuries. It represents a way of life quite unlike that which grew out of our Western Christian civilization. And although it is true that in our largely pagan England of today, immorality, inverted values, and an absence of an effective ethical code are to be found among wide masses of the people, it is only in the communist movement that these things are elevated to a theory and practice which is set up in opposition to that of Christianity, consciously pursued in an organized way.